Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
Hi there, this is the Athletic FC podcast weekend preview, and it is match day 35. It's Adam Leventhal back once again, and with me to look ahead to the weekend is Tim Spears, who's had one hell of a week. You've been busy, haven't you?
Yeah, it's been good. Been on the title race this week. Arsenal Tuesday, Liverpool at Goodison Wednesday, and Man City at Brighton last night.
And it's just two in the race now, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, obviously, you know, mathematically, it's not all over, but Liverpool were surprisingly sort of weak and passive and submissive. Like it's this, you know, a bit of a cliche, but Everton literally wanted to win that match more. You could physically see it. I think they won like 70% of duels in the opening half an hour. It was, Liverpool looked completely gone to me. And I think the fans think they're gone. There wasn't like an air of defiance at full time. They just sort of sloped off in complete silence, like feeling this is done. So, it was quite something to witness. Goodison Park was honestly one of the loudest games I've ever been at.
Okay, that's good. That's good to hear. Some good news finally for Everton. Charlie Eccleshare on the show. Great to have you with us. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Lovely to have you on the show. Do you agree with that? Is it just now there are two?
I think so, yeah. I mean, the fact that they're relying on two teams, both of whom been in pretty formidable form over a prolonged period. I mean, we're talking the whole of 2024, both of those teams, as had Liverpool, to be fair. But yeah, I can't see both Arsenal and City imploding to the extent that Liverpool now need them to. On top of the fact Liverpool need to win all of their games, which at the moment they don't necessarily look like doing.
And Jay Harris is here as well. Looking forward to the weekend, Jay?
Yeah, definitely. I'm actually going to Goodison Park on Saturday evening. So there's part of me that was, very excited by what happened in the Merseyside derby. But it means Everton are pretty much safe now. And I kind of wanted to go to Goodison Park with a little bit of jeopardy around their position, because like Tim's just alluded to, the atmosphere at Goodison Park when they need to win games is unlike anything I've kind of witnessed before. So I'm sure it'll still be a good game, but the stakes aren't quite as high as they would have been.
Okay, we shall see. The fixture formation this weekend's pretty straightforward. It's a 7-3-er, isn't it, Tim?
7-3-er. You've added ER on the end of that. Oh, no.
That's fine. It's a 7-3-er. Early kickoff on Saturday, just to lift Jurgen Klopp's mood, is Liverpool against West Ham at the London Stadium. So it's West Ham against Liverpool. 4:00 PM on Saturday. Wolves against Luton, who are desperately trying to find some form to get above the line. Fulham against Inform Palace, 3 wins on the bounce for them. Newcastle against bottom of the lot Sheffield United, and then Manchester United against Burnley, who are still, Tim, in with a shout of getting out of the relegation places, maybe. Then, as Jay mentioned, it's Everton against Brentford, 5:30 on Saturday. Then on to Sunday, 2 p.m. Bournemouth against Brighton, and the big one and the main focus for today's show, the North London Derby at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, Ange against Arteta. It's going to be big. It's going to be really big. And then finally, the reigning champions, Manchester City, have a chance to respond to whatever Arsenal do against Tottenham, and they themselves take on the fun factory that is Nottingham Forest at 4:30. We will start with the North London Derby. So let's set the scene at the top of the Premier League. Arsenal are at the summit on 77 points. City breathing down their necks, as we know, after victory against Brighton. It was an absolute stroll down on the seaside, 4-0. And they also have that crucial game in hand. Liverpool, meanwhile, their hopes have been dented. They're not in fine form. They lost the Merseyside derby. If you want to know how Liverpool are feeling, just find Trent Alexander-Arnold's face sitting on the bench looking to the sky. That pretty much sums it up. They are still on 74 points, 3 points behind Arsenal. Meanwhile, for Tottenham, still chasing Aston Villa in fourth, made more important by the fact that it's almost certain that fifth isn't going to get a Champions League spot. So they're currently 6 points behind Villa, but with two games in hand. So this is a really, really important game, obviously for the title race, but also the chase for the top four. Charlie, I wanted to start with you because on The View from the Lane, you've been talking about some significant North London derbies in the past, and one from, what, 15 years ago made you sort of think we might be at that sort of situation once again? Just explain all.
Yeah, just under 14 years ago. So this was April 2010. Quite a few parallels that day. Arsenal were going for the title, Spurs were going for the top four. And this was the famous Danny Rose debut volley goal. Spurs won the game 2-1. Went on and claimed fourth spot, and Arsenal's title challenge collapsed and they ended up finishing third. So I'm sure a lot of Spurs fans are hoping all those parallels come out to play again. That was one where Spurs really rose to the occasion, and no pun intended, and you know, it was a really kind of hostile atmosphere, as I'm sure it will be on Sunday. I mean, for Spurs, as if there wasn't enough at stake. You know, they've got fourth place to worry about. North London derbies are also, are always pretty ferocious atmospheres. But I think the context of Arsenal going for the title, it is going to be amazing. I mean, 2 years ago, these two played each other in May in what was essentially a top four playoff, which Spurs won 3-0. But the noise that night was unlike anything I've ever heard at that stadium and pretty much any stadium. It was incredible. And I think Sunday's going to be similar.
Jay, from your point of view, looking at Spurs from the outside, obviously still competing for fourth. Ange Postecoglou will argue that this is, you know, very much the start of his project. Do you think that them just simply still being in the mix for fourth is an achievement in itself?
Well, you know, if you listen to Ange Postecoglou in his press conferences, he's been very clear on the fact that whether Tottenham finish fourth or fifth, that's not necessarily the most important thing. It's all about if he can see the project progressing in the right way. But obviously, before the opening game of the season, they sold Harry Kane. So I'm sure if you'd told Tottenham fans that fast forward 9 months, they'd be in a position where they're still within a chance of claiming a top four spot, they probably would have bitten your hand off because there were so many uncertainties. Postecoglou wasn't the first choice for them to become the manager this season. But I think they've been a real breath of fresh air. You look at the development of some of the players. Pape Matassar was someone who didn't really make a huge impact when he first arrived at Spurs, and now he's been one of their best players this season. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk about the style of play, bringing in a breath of fresh air when you compare it to the Antonio Conte and Jose Mourinho eras. So I think it's been a really good season of progress for them, whether or not they finish fourth or fifth. You can see that they're going to be a force in the seasons to come.
What do you make of Ange's way, Tim, of sort of saying, oh, look, you know, it doesn't matter. It's about the process.
I mean, it's a good way to take the pressure off a team that, if they don't finish in the top four, will make history. I think I'm right in saying, because from the opening 10 games, they won 8 and drew 2. I'm sure at that point, Charlie will correct me if I'm wrong, it was stated that no team has ever finished out of the top four in a 38-game season from this point. So it's a lovely way of sort of taking the pressure off, saying, yeah, you know, we're not bothered, because it is a failure from that point onwards, you have to say. If you look at the form table since match day 11 after that run, I suppose we'll be eighth in the table. It shows you the dip they've had. Bournemouth are fifth in that table, incidentally, which shows you the run that they've been on. I know what he means in terms of Champions League obviously not being the be-all and end-all. We've seen with Newcastle this season, obviously they had a lot of fun, but it didn't really get them anywhere in a footballing sense, and maybe cost them a little bit in terms of their Premier League form. And even Spurs a couple of years ago, they didn't seem to be enjoying the Champions League much. That was to do with Antonio Conte's style of football more than anything. But I remember going to a last 16 tie against AC Milan and it just being so flat in there. And speaking to Spurs fans at the time, they were like, yeah, we've sort of done the Champions League a bit now. We know we're not going to win it. A little bit fatigued by it, perhaps. But in terms of this Ange team, I think they'd... I think they'd be a credit to the Champions League in the way that they play, and they'd be pretty exciting to watch next season. I'd love to see them in it personally, but then again, that would be incredibly harsh on Villa, who've obviously had a fantastic season. It's really interesting now that it's just down to a top four as to who's going to miss out, because I think it will be a massive disappointment to either team, you know, whatever Ange says.
And Charlie, you've written about the fact that obviously Destiny Adogie is out for the season. I mean, how much of an impact does that have on Tottenham's chances, and also maybe opening up areas that Arsenal will want to exploit?
Yeah, it is a big miss for Spurs. I think maybe amongst some sections of the fan base, it's not been felt as keenly as it might have been if this had happened a month or two or three ago. You know, Adogie started the season a lot like Spurs. I mean, he was such a symbol of that start to the season. Last few weeks, he's had some shaky moments, including being at fault for one of the goals at Newcastle. But that is the area where Arsenal are most dangerous. They most like to exploit spaces down there, right, with Odegaard, Ben White and Saka. So it's going to be a big job for whoever comes in. You know, we expect it'll be either Ben Davis or Emerson Royale. And also, you know, Udogie offers so much going forward as well. And I think some fans are thinking, well, maybe it's a blessing in disguise having a more defensively minded left back for this game. But I think the left back will also be expected still to do the kind of role Udogie does, which is to invert into midfield, support attacks and that kind of thing. So yeah, we're a big challenge for, assuming it is one of Davis or Royale, to come in and deputise.
Well, let's switch to Arsenal now. Obviously a really, really positive week for them. Victory over Wolves and then 5-0 against Chelsea, which was their biggest ever win in all competitions against the Blues. Jay, from the point of view of that result against Chelsea, do you think that they'll take huge confidence from it? Or was it just simply swatting away a mid-table side who didn't have their best player and it was just all pretty regulation?
I think firstly, the 2-0 victory over Wolves would have been really important for their confidence. After the disappointment of the Champions League quarterfinals against Bayern Munich, the defeat to Aston Villa and their new arch nemesis, Unai Emery. Regardless of the injury issues that Chelsea had, obviously Malagusto is out as well, and he's certainly in the last few months probably been maybe their second best player after Cole Palmer. It's their biggest ever victory over Chelsea. Almost feels like it could potentially be one of those generational defeats that kind of hangs around the club for a while. Remember Chelsea beat Arsenal 6-0 towards the end of the Wenger era, and it just becomes something that's just regularly used, I guess, as a bit of banter between rival fans. It's something that you can never really escape from. That's just etched in Chelsea's history now, that potentially in the season where Arsenal win the league, that they lost 5-0 to them, especially coming right off the back of the FA Cup semi-final as well. If you were a Chelsea fan and you knew that your side had the opportunity to spoil your rival's not procession towards the title, but march towards the title, surely you'd want your players to do everything within their power to do it. And Chelsea's players very, very clearly gave up in the second half. The fact that Kai Havertz scored twice against his former club and celebrated, I think that was massive for Arsenal. And it just means that they've obviously still got four games left. All four of those games are big. But Arsenal and Arteta would have penciled in their diaries the matches against Chelsea, Spurs and Man United as being the biggest hurdles, and thinking, okay, if we can get 9 points from those games, then we've done pretty much everything we can to try and win the title. So I think it's a massive confidence boost ahead of what is going to be a tricky game at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium on Sunday.
Tim, you were at the game at the Emirates. In terms of the midfield for Arsenal, it was the first time since the Community Shield that they put Partey, Rice and Odegaard as a midfield three. Does that look like the winning formula for you? Do you think it will be rolled out against Spurs?
I mean, it's certainly the sort of feels like the intended formula, you know, when they brought Rice in. And yeah, it really clicked the other night, from literally from like 15 seconds in, you know, Partey was winning possession in a central position, and Rice was getting forward, and then, you know, he's sets up Trossard's goal after like 4 minutes. Yeah, it did all seem to click, albeit against, you know, they weren't playing against a team. Honestly, like, it was ridiculous. You know, Chelsea were just, they were all doing what they wanted, it felt like. They were playing with, I remember right in the first half, they were playing with such freedom, and that was quite dangerous to Arsenal because, you know, they've got nothing to lose and they were just sprinting forward on the counter. But then, like, all the defenders were playing with freedom as well. They were all just doing, everyone was doing exactly what they wanted. So you've got to take that into account. However, I mean, Joe makes a good point in terms of what they can take from this game. The scenes at full time, honestly, were crazy. I went straight out after the whistle to sort of get the mood, as they say, and people just weren't leaving. Basically, it felt like a cup semi final or a cup final to me. It reminded me, I don't know if you've ever seen Fever Pitch, the film, where everyone sort of pours onto, honestly, like, it felt like where everyone pours onto the street at the end. People were just jumping into each other's arms. Everyone was singing. A guy walked past me and said, "I feel like I'm just walking out of a festival, having just seen the headline act." You know, and you just got that buzz. I don't know if it's because they beat Chelsea in particular, and it's their biggest ever win over Chelsea. But it had a real feel to it. And every time I've been there in the past 2 years, the atmosphere has literally sort of blown me away. You can really feel the unity. It feels like a club that's sort of very comfortable in its own skin and knows exactly where it's going. And that even if they don't win the title, the future's bright for next season, which I don't think you can say necessarily the same for Liverpool and Man City. So yeah, they're in a great place right now.
I think, Tim, it was the most kind of heady cocktail of both a really good win and a huge win in their own season, title charge, to beat one of your most hated rivals 5-0. You know, there's a lot of history here. Abramovich came in 2003 and Arsenal went unbeaten in his first season, 03-04, and they thought, you know, they'd done it, they'd cracked it, they'd seen off United. And then in come Chelsea, win a lot of trophies Arsenal think, you know, should have been theirs, that should have been their era. And not only that, they dished out some humiliations to Arsenal routinely. Jay mentioned the 6-0, but it was an annual event, or twice annual, that Drogba would just absolutely destroy whatever poor young centre-back. You know, Philip Senderos is still having nightmares about Didier Drogba. So I think there was a lot of, you know, that felt like 20-odd years of frustration just coming out in this, like, perfect night of joy and schadenfreude. To get both of those two things together is pretty amazing.
I feel like we've got to give a special shout out to the couple who were dancing at the end of the game as well. And it was picked up by TNT Sports that I think they were dancing to "It's Feeling Hot, Hot, Hot." Just, you know, what a special moment that is for the pair of them. And that kind of completely encapsulates what Tim was talking about, the feeling in that stadium. You just knew in that moment that it was something where, I'm not necessarily saying it was once in a lifetime, but it was a very rare event that everybody was very keen to soak every single second of it up.
I'm going to step away from being the celebration police, but, you know, nothing has been won. And going back to my original question, it was against a little bit of a shambolic side in Chelsea. So, yeah, great. You know, the mood is good. The future's bright, as you said, Tim, there. But it doesn't really count for anything unless they kick on and actually stick in top at the end of the season. And Charlie, do you think that if they beat Spurs in this game, it will have enough of an impact, more importantly, on Manchester City, in terms of putting the pressure on them and showing, well, no, look, we've beaten Spurs, and then almost in a sort of Kevin Keegan-y sort of way back in the day, you know, you've also got to take on Spurs and do the same thing.
Yeah, I think how Arsenal finish the season is really important, even if they don't win the league, because I think, you know, they've won 12 out of their last 14 league games. Drew one of the others, which was against City. They've slipped up one. They've basically been perfect this calendar year, and it looks like it's not going to be enough. I think if they win their last four, and possibly even if they win three and draw one, that will be a phenomenal end to the season. If it's not enough, I honestly think a lot of fans will be like, how many regrets can you have? Like, you are going to lose a game at some point. Like, that just will happen. And if it's not enough getting high 80s, you're up against a generational team that have won the Premier League four times in a row. I think it will have, you know, it will be more like Liverpool getting 97 points in 18-19. I don't know how many regrets you can have about that season if you're a Liverpool fan. If they now implode and, you know, really stutter, then they might have some regrets. But yeah, I think if all they can do is keep winning, I think it's a big ask to expect to win their last four. To go and beat Spurs away and United away, two places where, you know, last season being the exception, they've barely won in the last decade. You know, I think that would be an achievement in and of itself to win both of those games. City seem pretty impervious to pressure, don't they? Like, you know, I don't imagine, you know, even if Arsenal go and win comfortably against Spurs, I don't think you'll see that really affect City's performance straight after at the City ground. But they just, yeah, they have to at least do what they can do and just hope and pray that maybe there are drop points. I mean, I do think it will be so interesting if we are in a position where, if that City Spurs game is still live, what the atmosphere will be like at the Spurs stadium. Like, are they going to be actively cheering on City? Is it just going to be flat? It's going to be so strange. Like, I know, so in 99, Spurs went away to United and it was between United and Arsenal to win the title, but they were the away team, so they have much less of an effect on the atmosphere. And United won that day, so Arsenal didn't win the title. But for a home game, I can't think of a sort of parallel to this. It will be so strange if it does happen.
Right, let's focus on what the score is going to be in the game between Tottenham and Arsenal. Tim, you did very well on the score predictions. Once again, you predicted that Manchester United were going to beat Coventry on penalties. I guess you didn't quite imagine it was going to go that way, but well done on that. Score prediction from you, go ahead.
Blimey. It's hard to call, isn't it?
This happens on every show. Don't act like it was a surprise that I was going to ask you what the score was. Fail to prepare, prepare to fail. What's the score going to be?
2-2.
Thank you. Jay?
I think I might go 2-2 as well. I think there's going to be lots of goals.
And Charlie?
I have already predicted 2-2 this elsewhere. This isn't me parroting. And I predicted 2-2 last time and it was 2-2. I mean, it feels like a quite safe bet for a North London derby. There are always goals. The lead's always going this way and that. Like, I think it's one of those fixtures where whoever scored first has meant the least in Premier League history. Like, teams just come back in this game all the time. There are very few away wins. I think a kind of frenetic 2-2. I think what will be interesting is the fact Spurs haven't played a game in 2 weeks. Arsenal have played four times since Spurs last played. And you'd think, you know, for the last half hour when Ange likes to empty the bench anyway, those fresh legs could make a big difference.
Whatever happens in the game will then turn the screw or not on Manchester City, who are at the City ground against Nottingham Forest. Do you see this as just being a comfortable win for City, Tim, having been at the Amex and seen how they performed against Brighton?
I mean, all three title chasing teams really set the tone in, like, the opening minutes of their matches this week. It's really noticeable. You know, like I said earlier, Arsenal at Chelsea from minute one, Liverpool losing Jules from minute one. And City just looked so sharp at Brighton. They were on it straight away, just at their very best in terms of their passing, their pressing, which was exceptional, their movement. They definitely had their swagger back, albeit, you know, Brighton are so, so bad. I mean, they won three games in 2024, Brighton. Arsenal and Liverpool both beaten them relatively comfortably. So although City kind of looked, you know, ominously good, I didn't feel like that result was a sort of a key indicator as to where the title's going to go in the next few weeks. Because, yeah, I mean, Brighton were booed off. They had 10% lower possession than they've had in any game all season in any competition. That's 44 matches. They're 35% possession. The previous lowest was 45. So, yeah, I do think City are capable of dropping points. They dropped points at Forest away last year, by the way, which is where they're going this weekend. And, you know, we know they've had a poor record at Spurs, albeit against very different types of Spurs teams. I think City can drop points, but I also think Arsenal can. There's definitely twists and turns to come. And City, I speak to a few fans for the piece I've written on the title race for today, and they're kind of saying how in previous seasons they've kind of coasted through games at 80%, and you know, sort of 3-0 up after an hour or whatever. Now they're at sort of they are almost at their limit. They're at sort of 90-95%, and yes, more often than not, that is enough to win the game. But they are much more on the limit than they have been in previous seasons, and with certain influential players not as influential this year, i.e. Erling Haaland and to a lesser extent Kevin De Bruyne.
And in contrast to the Brighton game, Forest really do have something to play for, and it may well be that they are in the relegation zone by the time, you know, they're playing against Manchester City, which will turn the screw. And obviously the atmosphere at the City Ground has been very good, and it will only be ramped up, Charlie, by what happened against Everton, whether you agree in terms of it was the biggest injustice in the world or not. This is everything for them, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if Forest can, you know, we saw how nearly they drew with Liverpool at home. You know, and again, speaking of big injustices, they'll say they absolutely should have drawn that game were it not for a bad officiating decision. They gave Arsenal certainly a tough half. When Arsenal went there, it was one of those halves where Arsenal created nothing. They'll sit in, they'll try and make life difficult. And it is a bit like Goodison. It can be one of those grounds and places to visit where you can really struggle to find space. I think Forest will need to start this game really well. They'll need to get through the first 20-odd minutes, not go behind. I mean, if they could get the first goal, obviously that would be absolutely massive for them. Like Tim says, they, you know, City did draw this game last season, but it was a game where they missed a hatful of chances. Yeah, I mean, City are just so good at negotiating these tricky away trips. One thing I would say is that Brighton is maybe a better matchup for them in the sense that it's playing a team trying to do similar things, just at a much worse level, whereas Forest at least is one of the last, vestiges of, you know, back in the day, you'd have teams like Stoke and Bolton that would be the archetypal tough places to go. City Ground is probably one of the closest we have to that. They like to sit deep, play on the counter. They have a threat as well. You know, they've got some really good attackers, got some pacey attackers, and City leave a lot of space in behind, basically relying on Kyle Walker to sweep up. But that caused Liverpool a lot of problems as well. But it is, you know, once City get in this mood, I agree with Tim. I said on Monday, I still think City will drop points somewhere. It's just whether, you know, one of the other teams can capitalize on that. Will it be Sunday? I don't know. They'll probably have enough.
Right. So let's just put you on the spot. A quick prediction for Forest against City, and then following up with who's going to win the title ultimately. Tim, let's start with you.
I think City will sort of sneak this one 2-1. And yeah, I do think they'll win the league.
Jay?
3-0 City, and I think they'll win the league.
And Charlie?
I'll go 2-0 City, and yes, I think they will win the league.
Okay. So no twists, no turns.
There may be twists and turns, but it will ultimately end up at the same place.
Right, exactly. Excellent. Okay, let's now kick on to a team who's slipped out of the race.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is a paid advertisement from BetterHelp Therapy Online. Do you ever get that feeling that you need to get something off your chest? We all carry around different stressors, big and small. And when we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe place to release and discuss those thoughts and feelings and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, why not give BetterHelp a try? It's entirely online and it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you need to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to match with a licensed therapist. And if things don't click, you can switch to someone new at any time with no additional charge. With over 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. And because you listen to this podcast, you can get 10% off your first month of online therapy by heading to betterhelp.com/athleticfootball. That's BETERHELP.com/athleticfootball with no spaces.
So yeah, Liverpool looked to have run out of steam at the worst possible time. The defeat against Everton in the Merseyside derby in midweek was their second in three league games, and that's as many defeats as they'd had in their previous 42 matches in the competition combined. Charlie, let me come to you on this. Liverpool sort of relying a lot on last-minute winners to sort of sneak over the line in some difficult situations. Jamie Carragher said on Sky Sports that they've overperformed this season. Do you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I said a while ago, I think it was after that Forest game that I mentioned, where they, you know, eked out what felt like just one of so many late wins. And I think largely it was, you know, cited as evidence of, well, that's what champions do. You know, they win these late games. And I said at the time, I think it was on that week's Toto, I was like, they do, but they do that occasionally. And they stick in our minds, those wins, disproportionately because they're dramatic. But really, what teams who've won the title in the last few years, i.e. City, do is win most games pretty comfortably with a bit to spare. So they're not having to be like, you know, putting everything into every minute of every game. And I mean, Liverpool even made quite hard work of beating Sheffield United at home, you know, not long ago. That took a couple of late goals. And I did always get this sense. I said at that time, because that Forest game was the same weekend as Arsenal's win against Bournemouth had been the year before. And I said Liverpool reminded me of Arsenal last season, where it all felt a little bit crazy. And when that's working, it's this kind of amazing sugar rush. But is it sustainable? I always felt it wasn't. And so, yeah, I think maybe they have overperformed. I always said I thought they'd come third. They just didn't seem to have as solid a base as City and Arsenal. They didn't seem to have that ability to just go and make the games boring. You know, that's the thing. I'm sure most people were turning off that City game yesterday fairly early, because it was like, there's no jeopardy here. Arsenal went and beat Brighton 3-0 the other week. Similar kind of game. So I do think Liverpool, I think they have overachieved given, you know, they've had so many injuries as well. They've had defensive issues, lack of a really elite defensive midfielder. I mean, talking about Arsenal playing with Partey, Rice, Odegaard, Jorginho's been really good. And obviously City have Rodri. Liverpool don't have that kind of player, certainly not at that level anyway. So I think they've muddled along. In some ways, they've, you know, they've claimed a lot of hugely dramatic wins. But I always felt it wasn't sustainable. And that's kind of how it's played out the last few weeks.
We'll talk about the Arne Slot situation in a moment. But Tim, having been amongst Liverpool fans and in that atmosphere at the Merseyside derby, and this isn't a criticism of what Jurgen Klopp has done, but I just wanted to ask you the question, because, you know, him being open and transparent and early in a season and saying, look, I'm going to be stepping away, that's laudable. It shouldn't be an issue. But then I heard Wayne Rooney, who was on the Sky panel for the game, saying, well, you know, it does start to affect players' thinking, and it can then therefore have an impact on the field as well. Do you think that maybe Jurgen Klopp, considering they were genuinely in the race, should have done things differently? Could he have done things differently? Is it partially his fault that they faded away, or is it just that they've got the squad that they've got?
He could have maybe left it a bit later. It's obviously hard to keep these things a secret, and obviously you can see now, you know, Liverpool's business all over the place. They had that sort of manager leaving bounce, didn't they, after the announcement, and everyone got very emotional, and they started to win games for Klopp. Yeah, if he'd done that sort of now,
yeah,
you know, with five games to go, it would have worked pretty well. But yeah, I don't know. Liverpool do the whole sort of riding on emotions thing pretty well. That's I think the fans embrace that. But sort of speaking to fans about it on Wednesday, that they said that he looks tired now, and I agree with that. I thought he looked really tired after the game at Goodison the other night. It does look like the right time for him to step away. But I think it's inevitably had an impact on how the narrative has gone this season. And certainly, as soon as Klopp said he was going, a lot of people in the media suddenly were like, oh, okay, well, they're going to win four trophies now. And it's definitely heightened expectations unnecessarily.
I suppose when you're given the news that Jurgen Klopp is going to be leaving, there has been such an intense focus on who's next. And, you know, originally it was going to be Xavi Alonso. Obviously, this week we've learned that it's looking all but certainly to be Arne Slot, who's finally spoken about it prior to his game for Feyenoord against Go Ahead Eagles on Thursday evening. Charlie, you did a big piece on Arne Slot when it was looking likely that he was going to go in at Spurs. Is he the right fit for Liverpool?
I wrote a big piece. It never saw the light of day because I didn't go there. So I 4,000 words that I thought were going to be consigned to the dustbin of history. However, with him going to Liverpool, I have been able to resuscitate some of them. So I was as delighted as anyone when this rumour started. I think he's certainly a really impressive character. It feels like, you know, quite a lot of comparisons with Postecoglou, actually. He's a, you know, really good communicator, one of these people who is, you know, has a lot of empathy, great at managing players, plays really exciting football. So, yeah, I'm really excited to see him in the Premier League. I think the challenge always with, you know, with something like this is following Klopp and the charisma that Klopp has, how he's connected with Liverpool, both as a club, but also as a city. Like, it is an enormous job. And I don't mean to, you know, I'm not patronising Arne Slot, but, you know, last year when I was doing that piece about him joining Spurs, you know, one of the only reservations I found from anyone I spoke to, certainly in Holland, was, you know, he's an incredible manager, but this is going to be a huge step up, and you never quite know how someone will do. But, you know, that's when you get the best rewards often, is when you take that chance on someone. You know, you don't just go for the tried and tested. So I think the upside is huge. And he does have a big job on his hands now. I mean, the emphasis has changed, hasn't it? Because I think a lot of people were thinking whoever replaces Klopp could be coming into a double, triple, quadruple winning team. And how do you follow that? I think now the emphasis has slightly shifted, and it's okay that it's maybe a bit of a transitionary period. And how does he manage that challenge?
Quick prediction on this one, Tim?
1-0 West Ham.
Okay. Jay?
Feel like this game could end anyway. I have a bit of a strange feeling West Ham might pull out a bit of a shock as well. I'm going to say 2-1 West Ham.
Wouldn't necessarily be a shock, would it, Charlie?
No, I think Liverpool will pull off a shock win and bounce back and win 3-1.
Okay, jolly good. Right, let's crack on with what's going on at the bottom. So if you're a neutral, you do still want some jeopardy at the bottom, and no team in the bottom three is really delivering that fight at the moment. Luton with back-to-back 5-1 defeats, unfortunately, for them. They take on Wolves this weekend at Molineux. The neutrals, I suppose, Tim, will be hoping that Luton win this one, because it would then pop them above Nottingham Forest. It would just keep it alive. It would also, you know, give Burnley a little bit of hope of maybe, you know, doing similar at Manchester United and staying in the mix. I know you ruled them out, you know, 3 or 4 weeks ago, but they're on a decent run, aren't they, Burnley?
They're showing some form, showing some fight. Only lost one of the last five. From a Luton point of view, if there's one team apart from Sheffield United that you'd want to play in the Premier League right now, it's Wolverhampton Wanderers, who haven't won since they were knocked out of the cup by Coventry in the quarterfinals, and horrific league form, 2 points from the last six. They're not necessarily on the beach, but they've got some bad injury problems to key players. And there's also the Rob Edwards narrative of going back to his former club, which he'll be relishing. So, yeah, Luton have got a decent run in, and they've got a very good chance of winning what would be a crucial victory at the weekend. If they win and Forest lose, then all of a sudden they'll be thinking they can stay up with only a few games left.
Just on Luton, if I may, obviously watched them last weekend, and going into that game, Brentford knew it was massive, because if they'd lost that game, Luton would have moved within 4 points of them. Brentford would have been, yeah, still within the relegation battle. And I was just really expecting a difficult game at Kenilworth Road. It was the first time I was going to Kenilworth Road, and I was very much expecting a real gritty performance from Luton, really in your face. I just felt like they sort of rolled over. It was clear from the first 10 minutes that Brentford were on top. And I just thought, if that's how Luton's year in the Premier League ends, it's one thing to lose 5-1 to Manchester City. There's no shame in that. But to lose 5-1 at home to Brentford, I think that's their biggest defeat at home this season. I think they'd only ever lost by one goal before. To just have it unravel like that would be a really disappointing way for them to go out. But there was just a real lack of quality in certain areas. At times, it feels like they're almost reliant on Ross Barkley and Carlton Morris to produce something out of the blue to get them over the line. And it will be intriguing to see if they can get, what, maybe 5-6 points might be enough to see them over the line. But based on that performance last weekend, I don't know if they'll do it.
They couldn't ask for a better run-in. Like I said, Wolves are the team you want to play right now. Then they've got Everton at home next week, which Everton now basically safe. Then they've got West Ham away. West Ham might not be playing for anything at that point, penultimate match. You can see West Ham imploding in that one. And then Fulham at home on the last day, which is sort of just the kind of team you want, I think, on the last day, a team with nothing to play for. So yeah, but as Jay says, you don't really see them winning at the moment, but it's there for them.
It's kind of surprising they're still so in it in some ways. Like you say, Adam, off the back of 5-1 defeats, that felt sort of more, well, certainly the Brentford one felt like it might be, you know, really decisive, but they're still right in there. I mean, just a point that they have been helped by the fact that the teams around them are in similarly bad form, or Forest anyway.
Yeah, Forest seem the only team that sort of are almost willing themselves to plummet below the line just by being a little bit crackers with the way that they're operating. But I do just have, there's part of me that just sees Vincent Kompany celebrating on the touchline at Old Trafford after what would be considered an unlikely win against Manchester United. But it's, you know, with them being so topsy-turvy, it's quite imaginable. Look, I'm trying to make something out of this relegation scrap that maybe isn't there. I'm even doing something for Luton. I'm wearing a bit of orange there.
You're going to be banned from Vicarage Road if you do that.
Well, there's not really much going on at Vicarage Road at the moment, so I'm not really missing much. But no, word for Tom Cleverley, by the way. Good luck to him. First job in management, and he's been given the gig at Vicarage Road permanently. What a way to end.
Is he still there? Do we want to check before this goes out?
Don't be unfair. He's still there, and he's a good lad, and we wish him well to last a whole season. Okay, Tim, thank you very much. As always, have you got a quieter weekend?
Yeah, no football for me this weekend.
Oh, good. Brilliant. Jay, you're off, obviously, to Goodison.
Certainly am. Looking forward to it.
Excellent. And where are you going to be, Charlie?
I'll be at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Love it. Right. Thank you very much, gents. I do hope everyone listening and everyone watching on YouTube as well has a good weekend. Io is going to be back for the Athletic FC podcast on Monday. Until then, thanks very much for listening. Have a good one.
The Athletic.